Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What is happening, gang? We are live on the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Polian, and we have recovered from what was a pretty good but sort of somewhat controversial Super Bowl 56 that saw the Rams overtake the Bengals on what were some, at best, interesting or at worst, highly inconsistent fouls at the end of the game. But before we dive into our breakdown of the Super Bowl, I want to take a minute and talk about one of our favorite sponsors on the pod, BetOnline. Football might be over for this season, but basketball is full steam for both pro and college hoops. From all the latest odds, totals, player performance props to where the next fired coach is going to land, BetOnline is the number one spot for all your sports betting needs. So head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, to get started. It's not just basketball. BetOnline is your source for hockey, boxing, and UFC odds. Right to the Olympic coverage is the best in the business. From sports right down to your favorite Vegas casino games, BetOnline is your number one online wagering destination. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports and play your favorite games. Remember, head over to the website and use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use promo code BELIEVE. That's B-L-E-A-V. All right, gang, this is the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Polian, and this is our breakdown of Super Bowl 56. All right, what is happening, gang? We are live on the Inside Football Podcast with Will Polian. The Super Bowl hangover has officially worn off as we make the march into President's Day weekend. I think some of us on the pod are still a little riled up about the last few minutes of the game. How are we doing today, guys?
Good, thank you.
Yeah,
good,
we're doing well. It's there are quite a few things we need to talk about that ball game.
True. So to set the menu of events on today's show, we're going to spend the first part kind of talking through the events of the Super Bowl and then get Bill's insight on some of the coaching hires that happened through this last cycle as we begin our flip into my favorite part of the year, the road to the papier-mâché Lombardi trophy and the offseason as it has begun.
Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, until this time of year, sits on Bill's shelf in a Hellman's mayonnaise jar.
Hey, this is the part of the year where I think we actually have a chance of winning a championship.
Actually, yeah, that's right. Alex Marvez is the custodian of the
Alex.
Of the papier-mâché Lombardi trophy.
All right, we'll have to pull Alex in here one day to do the ceremony, and that would be akin to Bill's version of pro football teams winning the press conference.
Right.
That's correct. Yes. That's the exact analogy. Going to the Super Bowl, a couple of things that are extraneous to the game, but I think worth mentioning. First of all, I should, truth in lending, I almost never watch whether my team was in it or not, or whether I was in the stadium or not. I almost never watch the pregame show and never, ever watch the halftime show.
I never know that. I know that.
So with that as prologue, my only concern ever about the pregame show has been that the anthem be respectful so that everyone, no matter what their political persuasion, no matter what their race, creed, color, religion, you know, recognizes that it's representing all of America. And I've never, ever had any concern about that. And so kudos to the NFL this year for doing a great job in that regard.
Yes, beautiful.
A nice touch. The choir, I thought, maybe we should do the choir all the time.
Yes.
And
it just shows you that there, other than the Boston Pops, I mean, there are other ways to do it that are still respectful.
Yeah.
And so that was great. I thought that the NFL missed a great opportunity to highlight what is really, for those of us that are football historians and those of us who work in the NFL and take great pride in the fact that the NFL was the first sport to integrate before Jackie Robinson.
Yeah.
Did not do more to honor the memories of Kenny Washington and Woody Strode and Bill Willis and Marion Motley. And the fact that they were directly associated with the two teams in the game, the Rams and Paul Brown's Cleveland Browns, Paul Brown being, of course, the founder of the Cincinnati Bengals after he left the Cleveland Browns. I thought that it would be very appropriate to have their heirs be part of the coin toss, and they were not. They were mentioned in the broadcast. But I thought the NFL missed a big opportunity there to point out the history of the NFL and the fact that and the NFL was the first sport to integrate. And so, you know, small thing, but if you're a historian and you care about the NFL, it's not a small thing. I recognize that the pregame show is a show. It has nothing to do with the football game. But I just thought they missed a great opportunity there. The thing that I've always believed, and echo Coach Levy when in talking about this, just tell us where to be and what time and we'll show up and we'll be on time.
Yeah.
So I've never worried as a participant in the game what went on with the halftime show or the pregame show. Just tell us where to be and we'll be there and we'll be on time. But the fact that the two teams had been introduced, the anthem had been sung and played, which is always emotional for the participants. It's not unlike the Olympics. You know, when you look at our athletes on the podium, many in tears, you know, when the anthem is played because they recognize that they're representing their country. To have the teams lined up, ready to go, and have The Rock come out and do whatever the hell it was he did.
I've been waiting for this all week.
Yep.
Just, I'm almost speechless. I mean, I don't know what that was, what it was supposed to mean, what he said or shrieked into the microphone. All I know is I saw the players on both sides shaking their heads and jumping up and down like, let's go, come on, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And it just proves that, as someone once said to me with respect to the famous wardrobe malfunction, if you give theatrical produces an inch, they will take a mile, and that's what they did here. But to have the teams out there ready to play
on the field,
on the field, standing there while this guy went through whatever it was he was doing. I had no idea what he was doing.
Yeah.
It was
sort of the Michael Buffer.
The
teams had already been introduced.
Right, exactly.
They didn't need reintroduction. The fans knew that it was the Los Angeles Rams and the Cincinnati Bengals.
Well, I hope with what they had to pay for tickets, they knew that. But the timing right.
It was unbelievably odd.
It was just terrible. And the announce crew then were just saying how fabulous it was. They went on to praise it.
Well, I don't give a damn what they said. I mean, it's not there. I could care less. Think about this. Think about this. Any physiologist will tell you that the worst thing you can do for an athlete is to have him stand around. Standing is very fatiguing. These guys are out there ready to go. I'm being serious about this now.
Yeah.
These guys are out there ready to go. We got people in the league office talking about how dangerous the punt is. I think they're way off base. But the fact of the matter is these guys are going to go down and cover a kickoff.
Right.
And it may be returned. There may be physical contact on the play. And they're ready to go. They're out there ready to play. The show is over, right? The coin has been tossed. The anthem has been played. The teams have been introduced. They've had all the fol-de-rol and all the theatrics that anyone can dream up. And then these guys are out there ready to go. And some guy who owns a rival football league
is doing a wrestling speech
and does something. I don't know what the hell he did to this day. What was it?
It was essentially his wrestling sort of monologue or promo before the Super Bowl, which had they done that before they introduced the teams, that maybe makes sense, right?
Like it doesn't make sense, but it wouldn't worry me.
At that point, it's just, it's part of the show. He's going to introduce the teams. It is what it, because remember it's last year, they had him do it on video.
It's just an odd spot. It's just part of the hype, but the hype should be over when the players are supposed to take the field.
That's exactly
if you
right.
Watch
when the players take the field,
this is
the nonsense is over.
Right. This is right out of American Pie. The players tried to take the field, but the marching band refused to yield. And you get marching bands the hell out of there.
But you could tell it was dorking up the Bengals because the camera angle was more on the Bengals kickoff team.
Yes.
Who didn't seem to know. It also seemed like the league didn't tell the teams this was going to happen, where it's like the Bengals players are like, let's just go. And I turned to Jen and said, if Matt kicks this inbounds, you watch. This is Devin Hester part two.
That brings back a bad memory.
Sorry. Yeah.
But the very incongruousness of it, In light of the fact that these guys are going to go down and cover a kickoff, it's not only tone deaf, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
They're standing around there. If I were a coach, I don't know whether the coaches were told this was going to happen or not. I wouldn't have put my team on the field. Yeah. I would have had them stay on the sideline and kneel.
Well, and if you remember, this happened in the championship game where Buffer was actually still doing the let's get ready to rumble while the 49ers kicked off to the Rams in the championship game. So this is not isolated. This seems to be a trend.
This was the attempt to out Buffer is what they were doing. And this is, what we're saying is this is where the show business.
This is a trend that needs to be stopped.
Right.
Now,
business is taking over the sport, in the biggest game of the year. I mean, at some point, the hype, the game, the showbiz part has to stop. And you're going to play football.
Yeah, we need to play football, and we need to let the players play football in a safe way. Not standing. I don't know how long it took. It seemed like forever for me, but I had no idea what he was doing. So, I don't know that the timing is right or wrong in my mind. But the fact of the matter is, standing around like that is not good for the players. So I hope that at the next owners meeting, somebody stands up and says, please, once the players take the field, can we play football?
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, that it's a small thing, but again,
Honest to God.
Coach, knowing what I know about the physiology, I'd pull the players off the field and say, kneel down. Let me know when you're finished.
Well, and let's say that led to some sort of weird competitive advantage where maybe the Bengals do a freaky onside kick to open the game and the Rams are distracted. Maybe Mac kicks it in bounds and you get a return. It could have had a weird impact on the game, especially a game that was that tight.
It very definitely could.
It was.
It very definitely
could. You know, and the, one last thing, you know, even just watching it as a TV program, it was so startling and you know, ill-placed that it disrupted just even as a fan. You're building up to wanting to watch this kickoff, and they just threw that in there out of nowhere. And first of all, we went on longer about the Rams. I thought he was there to cheer for the Rams the way he started out, and then he kind of threw in the it just was bizarre and inappropriate.
It would have been fine if he had done it, if they had placed it when the teams are running out and being announced.
Yeah, I mean, isn't the Super Bowl itself enough?
But then that's the show. It made no sense where it was placed.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The show and show business should not intrude
into the football.
On the football game.
Yes.
Yeah. It, you know, and we all recognize, those of us in the league, I think, and who've been in the league and have been in the game, all recognize what one of our Buffalo players famously said to me during or the run-up to Super Bowl 25, hey, Bill, don't worry about this or that. We're just the clowns and jugglers here. And right. You know, that's very true in the larger scheme of things. And I recognize that all that showbiz part of it is part of the justification for the price of tickets and the fact that it's a special event and what have you. I get all that.
Yeah.
But don't intrude on the game. Let the players play. Don't have them standing around while whether it's Michael Buffer or The Rock, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what the hell does he have to do with a football game?
Yeah.
It's not a wrestling match. Thank God. You know?
Sometimes when they don't make the calls.
Some of us do like that.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Speaking of calls, once again, although I can't pin this on analytics, I presume that the Bengals coach had other ideas in mind. And as you pointed out, Scott, you know, he might have opened with an onside kick. Instead, he opened an empty and tried to throw the Rams off track with that, but then went for it on fourth and one at midfield.
Yeah.
Barely into the game. Obviously missed and with a pass. And not a run. A pass is more dangerous than a run. Less success in the pass than the run. And gives the Rams 40 yards that they didn't earn. And they go down and score a touchdown, and he's behind the eight ball. Now, I understand why he might have done it. Because if you looked at the film leading up to the game, the one thing you would say was the biggest discrepancy between the two teams was the fact that the Rams' defensive line had a huge advantage over the Bengals' offensive line. So I can understand maybe he figured I'm going to get an early score, knock them back on their heels, and put ourselves in a position to perhaps get a jump on them. Understandable. But you got to understand the other side of it, that if you miss, you fail, the odds are something bad is really going to happen because you're giving the other team 40 yards that they haven't earned. And so two things come to mind. The first is that modern day coaches don't understand the value of yardage. They all need a lesson from Bill Parcells on the value of yardage in football games. That's what it's about. is gaining yards. And if you hand the other team 40 yards that they haven't earned, you've really put yourself in a bad position. So that's number one. Number two, what really frosts me is that virtually no one in the media called that out.
Yeah.
It's now accepted that, quote, being aggressive, close quote, is a good thing. It's not. That's a turnover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it should be counted as such. If you go for it on fourth and one, fourth and two, fourth and three, and don't punt the ball in outside of an end of game situation, which they were right to do so at the end of the game, the Bengals, then it should be counted as a turnover because that's what it is. And this idea of, oh, it's great. So let's be aggressive. Sure. Wonderful. You're down 7-0.
Well, especially in the day when field goal kickers, you start out there, the chances that you're going to get enough yardage to give up three.
You're just giving them 3 points.
It's inevitable.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're giving them 3 points. Well, that's what I say.
How many fourth and one plays do you love in a game like that? Because, you know, thinking it through, if that was maybe their favorite fourth and one call, maybe you would have liked to have that call again later in the game instead of the two P Ryan runs.
Where it's really more important than
right
to open it. But my point is that this kind of stuff has become accepted in the larger football universe, including the media and fans, when it's really nonsense. It's a turnover when you miss. Now let's go back. Kansas City Bengals. 5 seconds left in the half.
Take the points.
Take the points. Now, Andy was wrong. He almost admitted as much. He should have kicked the field goal. 6 seconds, as we've talked about on this show before, is the magic number. So go kick the field goal. And secondly, Mahomes was wrong because he should have thrown the ball out of bounds and saved some time on the clock to kick the field goal. So two wrongs. Make a big time wrong.
Yeah, no right. There's no right about it. Yeah.
If they kick the field goal and everything else transpires as it did, the Kansas City Chiefs are in the Super Bowl and not the Bengals. That's what's at stake here.
Yeah.
I go back to Colts Bills 2 years previous, right? Fourth down. Analytics says go. They have a play they think is good. The play turns out to be good. The quarterback overthrows the ball a little bit. The receiver had to make an Andre Reed Hall of Fame catch to make it a touchdown. He doesn't. And as a result, the Bills lose the game by 2 points.
Right.
You know, that's what's at stake here. And at very least, people ought to recognize that when you miss, it's a turnover.
Yeah.
It is not just a miss. Oh, he was aggressive and he missed. No, right. You turned the ball over when you shouldn't have.
Bill, and I think we also, again, have to recognize what analytics is and that using broad spectrum analytics, even if you're doing it in the way it predicts, has nothing to do with the success on any one individual play at any time. It is irrelevant if this works X number of times out of Y. It's not those players, it's not those field conditions, it's not, you know, where it is in the game. They don't have that stuff. They just look at, oh, well, if you try four times, this is how many times you're going to make it. And we've seen it fail and hurt things for that team again and again and again. And they blame.
Well, that's right. My point is that we've lost sight of the fact that the failure rate is you know, to borrow and convolute an old Joe Paternoism, failure in these cases is sometimes fatal.
Yeah.
You know, Joe always said, victory is not final and failure is never fatal. Well, you go for it on fourth and one, the likelihood is that the result may be fatal.
Yeah.
And there's three other bad things that can happen. I mean, the thing that made me wonder is, because to me, it's a bigger question, right? This is a more like a 30,000 foot view question about sort of football philosophy and approach to the game. And you wonder if in this era of people being more aggressive in these situations, being more driven by analytics, throwing to be able to run, if you're going to give birth to maybe a few coaches who are going to have that 86 Parcells mentality, who are going to say, take the yardage, don't turn the ball over, run the football, stop the run. That's a formula that we can consistently win with. You just wonder if something new, old is new again trend is going to come to the NFL and see a lot of success.
Well, my hope is that it would, because that's how you play winning football.
Right.
You don't turn the ball over. That's number one. Everyone knows and agrees. I don't think anyone argues that the team that turns the ball over most is likely to lose the game. In a 90% range, by the way, if you want to use analytics over time.
Yeah.
So when you miss on fourth and one at midfield, that's a turnover.
Yeah, it is.
That's my point. It's a turnover. And broadcasters and writers and analysts have to recognize that.
Right.
It's not a gamble that failed. It's a turnover.
Right.
It's not and, so what.
Mm-hmm. And a punt is a turnover, but a punt puts the ball 40 yards farther down the field.
The Rams would have started somewhere inside the 10.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a 40-yard swing.
Versus here's a gift. Here's a gift. And if they had made that, they still have to drive. I mean, come on.
But to me, it's also like a football philosophy thing, just in the sense of I don't think it's that different than it was pretty obvious in the second half of that game. This is going to be a field position and defense game, and the whole world knows we're probably going to run Joe Mixon to death on first and second down, but screw it. That gives us the best chance to win at this point. Let's just do it.
Yeah, that's exactly
And they didn't
right.
do it.
And they didn't do it, yeah.
It was just like every drive, you'd be like, Mixon needs to touch the ball on first and second down. Mixon needs to touch the ball on first and second down, and they just wouldn't do it. So to me, it is a football philosophy question, I think.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. And you know, the object is to win the game. Yeah. In the mortal words of Herm, right? Herm Edwards, the object is to win the game, not to be aesthetically pleasing, not to have great football theater. The object is to win the game. And in that game, way more than at any other time during the season. The playoffs are one and done, and the Super Bowl is that your chance to write your name in the history books. And that, if ever there was a time to play sound football, that was it. Now, I can understand they were, when you looked at the matchups, you said to yourself, whoa, the Bengals really are behind the eight ball here. This is a tough matchup. So I can understand, you know, the coach saying, well, let's go, you know, we'll take a chance here. At worst, it costs us 3 points. In the end, it costs 7. But was that the time to take a chance? I don't think so. I don't think you hand the other team points, which in that situation, with the Rams field goal kicker, with the weather conditions the way they were, you don't hand the other team 3 points.
And you had played okay on defense on the possession beforehand. You know, the first two plays were good, but then you settled into the game, played good defense that looked like the rest of the football game.
So, when you talk about football philosophy, when you look at the coaches that are doing it, you know, it's the young coaches. And the question is, Bill, has somebody seems to have put this idea in their head that they are ushering in this new era of how to play smart football, and that it's analytics driven, and that they should take chance after chance after chance and have it blow up in their face. But it's young, it's hip, it's the new way to do things.
Well, that may be the way it's being construed by the media. I know from having talked to coaches at length that there are good things that analytics gives you. And we've always done it. We just have, I'm echoing a friend who's a general manager. He said to me, all we're doing today is what we did 20 years ago. We just have more information and better ways to analyze it. And it's helpful. It's not the be all and end all. You're not guided by it. You know, you shouldn't be guided by it except as an input, but it's helpful. And I get that. I get that. And have always practiced that, actually. But the fact of the matter is that this is being construed, as you say, Rick, as some incredible philosophical divide that's taking place in football, when in fact, nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah. And again, Bill, though, the way you, I understand there, the you're able to create more and more specific data than you did. But again, before, when you were using analytics, you were using it in the broader sense as to here is our, you know, we're putting this together. There's a philosophy underlying this. You weren't, even if you had had numbers, you weren't saying, I'm going to make this one play call based on what numbers tell me. You were going to look at larger things, the situation in the game, the opponent, the matchup. You know, you didn't make those decisions just based on numbers that somebody gave you when you made a call.
No. I mean, the numbers represent something. They're not the be all and end all by themselves. People who are math people, I think, believe that. But the fact of the matter is, they just represent something. They're a way of looking at things. So if against empty on fourth and one, the Rams were in nickel or dime, 75% of the time, and you felt like you could run the ball for 1 yard with Mixon, then all that does is give you a picture. It doesn't tell you that they're going to be in that defense.
Right.
It doesn't tell you that, you know, Mixon will gain the yard. It doesn't tell you that you can block Aaron Donald.
Right.
What it tells you is that, okay, in a broader sense of things, now make your play call based on what you think your best advantage versus them is, not the fact that 75% of the time they're going to be in one specific defense. So it is valuable. I'm not being a Luddite and decrying it. I'm just saying that, and the Bengals coach may not have even thought that. He might have thought he was stealing a possession, number one, and trying to steal some points in a game where he was the underdog. I get that. My point is that to just treat it as, oh, well, he was aggressive, let's applaud that. That's incorrect. Right. It's a turnover. Yeah. That's my only issue with it.
And a potentially reckless decision.
Because if as you say, the things that can go wrong are far more likely than the things that can, that will go right.
You don't get it. You give away points. You lose a possession. It's a turnover. And you theoretically blow in the first four plays of the game your favorite fourth and one call.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well said. Let's turn to the officiating next, because that's the next most controversial subject.
What is more important than peace of mind? Literally nothing. And that's what NordVPN is here for, to give you peace of mind while you're online. And with all the threats that you face today on the internet, it's more important than ever to be sure that you have the best VPN you can get. NordVPN is the world's best VPN service, offering the fastest connectivity, most servers, and next-gen encryption to make sure that everything you do online stays secure. Plus, you can use NordVPN on all your computers and devices, no matter the operating system. With NordVPN's unlimited bandwidth, you never have to worry about a slow connection protection either, and plans start at under $4 per month. So grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/believe or use code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to get up to 70% off your NordVPN plan, plus 1 month additional for free. It's also risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Head over to nord.com/believe to get started today.
There's a larger issue here that Mike Pereira, interestingly, on my Sirius radio show covered last night in some detail. I think the number, if you remove the penalty that everybody in America could have called when the non-active defensive back jumped into the celebration in the end zone for the for the Bengals, little kids could call, hey, that's a penalty, he's not supposed to be there, that doesn't count. I think prior to the last 2 minutes of the game or the last drive of the game, there were three penalties. I think that's the right number. That's impossible. Right? I mean, it's just impossible.
It doesn't happen in 60 minutes of football.
And the idea that apologists for this philosophy of officiating have put forth, that the teams are really great teams, and so the deeper you go into the playoffs, the more disciplined the teams are, the less penalties they commit. Absolute bunk. There's no truth to that whatsoever. Go watch the film.
Right.
So the officials, whether told to or not, and we don't know what the instructions to them are, simply don't want to call penalties in the playoffs. Mike pointed out that there's been an average of 4 penalties per game in the playoffs. That's preposterous.
Yeah. I mean, jersey tugs are actually still illegal, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
But T-shirt tugs are not, Rick.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay. No, T-shirt tugs are illegal.
No, I'm joking.
Being facetious.
I know you're being facetious.
But I mean,
that means you've got 28 penalties across 7 games.
Let's back up a little.
We got a big problem here.
Right. So let me ask you, talk about your opinion of, should you call the playoffs or the Super Bowl differently than you do other games? Or are there a thing called the rules of football and they should be applied even-handedly every time?
I'll give you a little history. Art McNally, who ironically enough and thankfully is going into the Hall of Fame this coming August, who's the patron saint and the father of football officiating, always said that a foul in September is a foul in January. And of course, February being an extension of January. That was the approach that he believed the officials should take. And the competition committee ratified that 4-square every year I was on it. When Jerry Seaman replaced Art, he created something called the Super Bowl call, which was essentially make sure that this is a call that you're 100% correct on before you make it. The competition committee vociferously disagreed with that, because we were getting, among other things, a rash of illegal contact and a rash of a holding and a rash of DPI and a rash of defensive holding. So when Mike Pereira became the director of officiating, that philosophy changed. And we went back to the idea, at least the guidepost, that a foul in September is a foul in February. After Mike left, Dean Blandino basically carried that out. But as replay has encroached on the game, as we have more and more mandated replay, every turnover, every touchdown is replayed. There are other situations where, you know, fumbles and things like that. You don't blow the whistle. You let the play go and get it on replay. As replay has encroached on the game and expanded, officials are loath to throw flags where it's a you know, a 51-49 call, or even a 60-40 call, because their feeling is if it can be corrected by replay, it will. And B, we don't want to decide the game. That's a natural human reaction. And the bigger the game, the more that human reaction comes to the fore. So it's reasonable to assume that you'll get somewhat looser officiating in the playoffs, or liberal is probably the best way to describe it, officiating in the playoffs than you might during the regular season. It has nothing to do with the efficacy and the penalty-free play of both teams. Let's get that off the table right away. That's a talking point, and it's bunk. It's not true. In fact, Scott Pioli was quoted in Sports Illustrated, on ESPN Plus the other day in an article as saying the Patriots knew that officiating in the playoffs would be more liberal than it is during the regular season, and they taught techniques that took advantage of that. That's no surprise.
Yeah.
But it's
not to you, that's for sure.
but it's been verified by a participant. So, and good for them, you know, good for them for doing it. But here's the problem. The people who believe that a foul in September is a foul in February, and who teach their players to play that way, are at a disadvantage, because the rules effectively change in the playoffs. And that's been egregious since Dean Blandino left as the, you know, and new directors of officiating have come in. And then on top of that, we have had two egregious misses in the Saints Rams game, championship game 2 years ago. And on Sunday, plays that, again, your 14-year-old nephew could have called from his couch. So that's a problem. And then Bengal fans have a right to bellyache, because inside 2 minutes, they got a defensive holding call. It was defensive holding. It was not illegal contact, that had been let go.
Yeah.
The very same technique had been let go for 58 minutes.
Yeah.
And now they throw the flag. That's simply wrong. That's not the way to officiate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a problem, and the league needs to address it. To the OPI/face mask, Mr. Torbert is a very good lawyer, I'm told. It shows in the way he administers a game. Apparently, in the post-game questioning from the pool reporter, he answered the wrong question correctly. He said it didn't look to him like there was a grab and turn of the face mask, or it didn't look to the covering officials like there was a grab and turn of the face mask. I would respectfully disagree, but he made a strong case. But that wasn't the question. The question was it OPI?
Right.
And the answer was, it was OPI.
Yeah.
There's no way to justify a non-OPI call in that situation. Because
right.
T. Higgins simply took Ramsey and threw him to the ground.
And
whether it was incidental or not is immaterial.
Yeah. I mean, what I didn't understand is, when you're standing there watching that, did they think a world-class athlete like Ramsey is running straight down the field and all of a sudden his feet go out from under him and he goes flying sideways? I mean, if there's not some other intervening force to stop his forward movement, how did that happen? What threw him to the ground?
Well, there's a school of thought that, and I have not seen the all 22 yet, so I can't attest to this, but there's people tell me that one of the covering officials, because of a new mechanic, which means that they have to stand still, that they don't run with the players anymore, that when the play went by the covering official and he was standing still, he was blocked out.
Right.
And the back judge who should have had it was on the other hash mark. But apparently looking at the play and should have seen the play.
Yeah.
But if it was missed, as was the case in the Saints game, with three officials looking at it, then there's something wrong with the mechanics. You got to go back. So the larger question is not, was it OPI? Yes, it was.
Of course it was.
100 people in a bar, inebriated or not, would have all agreed that it was OPI,
yeah,
unless the bar happened to be in Cincinnati, and then only 50% might have agreed that it was OPI.
Right.
The fact of the matter is it was OPI. There's no way to justify anything else. And if, in fact, it was a mechanic that caused the covering officials to be out of position, that's a big, big, big problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it even felt to me like T. Higgins turned around and looked for the flag himself for a moment before he took off again.
Well, Ramsey didn't seem upset because he knew he was going to get a flag.
Yeah. But don't you think, did you see Higgins sort of pause and look at the ground? And he's like, oh my God, I'm getting away with this. Oh, I'm going to make a touchdown.
There's also a larger issue involved that Torbert highlighted, I think probably unintentionally, in his post-game remarks, where he said, well, we didn't think that it rose to the level of OPI.
Oh my God.
What do you need to get OPI? Does he need to take a crowbar to the defensive
back? You have to remove your helmet and bite someone in order.
What you have to do is, Scott, the opening scene in The Last Boy Scout.
Yeah.
When the Super Bowl, the one guy takes out a gun and shoots the guy who's covering him. That's what OPI is now, Bill. Lead has to fly.
Yeah, I mean, not to exaggerate the way you guys are, but what does he have to do? Put him in a headlock?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the most egregious thing you could do. I mean, he kind of did.
Right.
He almost did. Yes.
Right. Yeah. And beyond throwing some. Yeah. I mean, he threw. Now, maybe it is good The Rock.
It could be that they thought
that
the
was
Rock,
a wrestling. Yeah. That was
they thought The Rock
move.
Was going to start the second half. So exactly. You needed to open with a suplex.
A suplex. Exactly. That's it was a wrestling move. And I saw his neck twist too. Anyway, so I know, Bill, you're right. That's irrelevant. You don't even have to get that far. But the guy's head turned, and he flung him to the ground. And it was the most egregious case of peasant OPI I've ever seen, I think. And I'm not exaggerating with that. I'm not
OPI. Yeah, the egregious DPI in the Ram Saints game is another example of that. And now we've had two of those in 3 years, which tells us that and they were both game changing, because that's a touchdown, obviously. And in the Rams Saints game, the Saints did not get the ball and have the ability to kill the clock and win the game and go to the Super Bowl. What's happened is we got a problem, you know, officiating department, you've got a problem.
Yeah.
And they need to realize it. And they need to stop rationalizing and coming up with you know, convoluted explanations about, well, it didn't rise to the degree of OPI and all this other stuff that everyone knows is nothing more than spin.
Exactly.
They need to recognize. If I were on the competition committee at first meeting, I would make this speech.
Yep.
Say, so, you've got a problem here.
It's,
and you need to address it.
I think the phrase going forward is, New York, we have a problem.
There you go. There you go. And unless they get it straightened out, it's only going to get worse, because you can't get any worse than have three or two flags for 58 minutes and then four in the last 2 minutes. That's the NBA.
That's the other
thing. That's the NBA.
Right. I mean, there's
never been that way.
And you're also, as many people know, a big baseball guy, right? I mean, different umpires, different strike zones, but the whole thing is call it consistently. Both teams, right, same way through the game. You can't change it. Oh, well, now it's close. It's in the ninth inning, so I'm going to call it differently.
Well, yeah, because if you're not going to call OPI, that the questionable Cooper Kupp call can't be called.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So, you know, that's the biggest problem of all, the inconsistency. And they got to recognize it. They got to recognize it. I'm sure, knowing the people on the competition committee that I, as I do, I think they will certainly deal with it. And there's any number of ways to deal with it. One way is sky judge. Another is to take away the third challenge, which is largely meaningless anyway, that the coaches have. That was a sop to the coaches who wanted more replay. You know, if you get the first two right, you get a free third challenge. Take that away. And as Coach Belichick has suggested in the past, give them one free challenge on anything.
Yeah.
But the decision has to be made in real time, not super slow.
Yeah.
Real time. Mm-hmm.
You know, but that also shows, Bill, when you said before, you know, with the excuses that they're using. Oh, yeah, you're never going to be able to get rid of the human nature part you talked about. It's a big game. I don't want to make the wrong call. But since a lot of things cannot be caught by replay, you can't use that as an excuse to say, let replay catch it, because that's not even available on certain situations. So, you know, the officials have to officiate.
Yes, they do. They cannot be ball spotters.
No.
And by the way, I personally think, since this crew is one of the crews that threw the lowest number of flags in the league, if not the lowest, I'm not sure where they rank.
Third from the bottom.
Third from the bottom. Okay. That sent a message to every other officiating crew. This is the best crew. This is the all-star cast, right?
Yeah.
These are the number one guys at their position.
But it made that last 2 minutes seem even more inconsistent. So if you know going into it, this is not an officiating crew that calls DPI. They've called this game a certain way. You have three penalties called at the time that the Cooper Kupp situation happens. It makes it feel that much worse.
It does, because it's inconsistent. So, you know, the bottom line is that they got a problem and they need to rectify it. And you cannot let these egregious misses stand some way or another. The larger problem, it can't be dealt with in 3 weeks worth of competition committee meetings. That's a larger problem of teaching and philosophy and things of that nature. But you cannot let the Rams Saints game call just simply go by and say, well, it's breaks of the game, and then this particular play take place and say, oh, well, that's the breaks of the game. No. Right.
Yeah.
No. That would be
right.
That's wrong.
Right. What are you going to do? Reward them with letting that crew call the next Super Bowl?
Well, I felt, as much as I love Bill Vinovich as an official and a guy, and he was the official in the Rams Saints game, I would have suspended the whole crew for at least 1 week the following season,
if not longer.
To send a message that you can't miss this. You can't miss it.
Yep.
Because Vinovich should have called everybody together and said, hey, we sure we don't have anything on this play? Anybody see anything?
Yeah.
You know, you can't let that just shrug your shoulders and say, oh, well, yeah, that's the breaks of the game. No, that's, you know, there has to be some accountability, because that's the thing the coaches the coaches complain about most and general managers complain about most in a survey that's sent out by the competition committee every year is A, consistency, and B, no accountability. Mm-hmm. And we saw that on perfect, crystal clear display on Super Bowl Sunday. So something needs to be done. That's my two cents worth.
Mm-hmm. So Phil,
it's worth less than that, but that's
two cents plain.
what do you make of all the sort of, I mean, this is probably because I'm knee deep in Super Bowl blueprints, but what do you make of all the retirement talk that's coming out of Los Angeles? Like McVay kind of openly talked, because I mean, it makes you think of the Marv Levy sort of, if you're thinking about retiring, you're probably retired.
Yeah.
A lot of guys talking about it.
I think in both cases, and in Kyler Murray's case with a little bit more, you know, blather on a different idiom, so to speak. It's all about money,
right?
You know, yep. Get my contract right and I'll come back.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what it's about.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Scott, I'm not going to tell you about the famous retirement. Well, I told Scott the day and I know it's the popular thing now, but Scott will back this up. I told him off the air when the first Brady retirement thing leaked, I said to him, Brady's gone to San Francisco, and now everybody thinks, I don't know if it will happen.
In my life, Rick Schaefer is definitely going to be the first person who said, I think this is a ploy to get to the 49ers.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Thank you.
Well, but okay, let's address that because it's out there and it's current. We don't know if there's any truth to it. But again, let me dispel some myths. He is not free to go wherever he wants to go.
That.
Right? The
right.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers own his rights, and as of now, he's still on their roster. So if he or his representatives are talking to anybody else, that's tampering to begin with. And now I know it's rampant in the NBA, and I know we just went through the annual Harden, maybe semi-annual Harden, I don't want to be here deal.
And there's a legal challenge that has said that there was tampering with Brady last time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
But there is absolutely no question that the Bucks own his rights. And will, even if he submits his retirement papers.
Totally. Totally agree. But the way that strategically thinking back as an agent, how do I try and force the hand saying, okay, I have all the money I need. If they won't trade me, I really will retire. But why? I'm Tom Brady. They can get a lot for me. This is the leverage I have by saying I'll just sit out. And I really will. Because the last place I want to go, you know, New York, LA for my career, you're not going to play in either of those places. I've come from there. I grew up their fan. Yeah, they snubbed me, but this would be the ultimate. That's how I would do it, right? If I were his agent, if I were Don Yee saying, okay, how do we retake the leverage? Saying, okay, look, you want to get something out of my rights, which you still have, or it's it? Fine. I'm going off to be with Giselle and the kids.
Be my guest.
Right.
If I'm the GA, if I'm Jason Light, be my guest. Enjoy retirement.
So, well, then you get, but you do get, maybe you get something for him.
Well, maybe you get Jimmy G and some picks.
Exactly. That's my thing.
Well, for Tom Brady, you know what I would demand for Tom Brady?
Well, okay. This
for
is
a team where he would give the team a very legitimate chance to win the Super Bowl. You know what I'd demand?
What?
Three ones and Jimmy G.
Okay.
All right.
Why is he any less valuable? Why is he any less valuable than Houston's quarterback, Deshaun Watson?
Well, it gets into the argument of you can only win the one in the season that you're in, but you're probably only going to get one out of Brady. You could get more out of Watson.
Yeah. So you're going to devalue the Lombardi trophy?
Well, you're right. I mean, look, I think there are different points of view, and I'm an agent and you're a general manager, and we're going to disagree over that. But, you know, I'm just saying, and by the way, I don't see why, and I used to say.
By the way, you're in the same conference we are.
Yeah, right.
We might meet you in the conference championship.
Well, let's just say
it's now 4-1.
Right, but officially retiring never makes any sense anyway. You can just not play. You don't play, and it's over. You don't want to have to unretire. You have to apply to unretire. You know, just stop playing. Nobody should retire officially.
And let's just say some of us are very comfortable giving up 3-1s to maybe get Russ.
Well, that's another issue, but my position as a GM,
I get you,
is always I'm handing you in the conference a reasonable chance to win the Super Bowl.
I get it.
It's going to cost you a king's ransom and a queen's ransom.
And they don't have the picks to do
it.
This is what makes for good conversations.
Well, and the other problem for the 49ers is they don't have picks.
Well, then it's forget it.
Right. It's just
that's true. That's true.
Let's start
with Bosa and Debo. You know.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Right. Now, we're,
you don't have picks.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, Brady can't do it alone.
Well, what do I care?
I know.
That's not my worry. Your worry.
But that would be right. That's right. But hey, that is the only last thing that would top his career. That's it. I mean, that would be the capper. There's no place. He's not going any other place. So.
Well, the NFL is not a charity. So.
But you would admit that the NFL would love to have Tom Brady play for one or two more years.
Well, what the hell do I care?
I know you don't care.
What do I care with the NFL?
This is the same. Wait a minute. This is the same league that gave you The Rock. They want Tom Brady back.
Hey, Bill, one other sort of total hypothetical question, because obviously I've been reading the book. And this is a unique blueprint to get to a Super Bowl. This is clearly we're mortgaging the future to get this one and maybe the next one. And then we are going to be in all kinds of purgatory in 2023-24. How do you think this team stacks up against some of the other sort of iconic teams? My takeaway was this is a team where if you guys had played them, you know, the Bills teams had gotten to play this Rams team, you'd have a couple of rings. I mean, I don't think this is an all-time kind of team.
Well, this particular Rams team, first of all, when you compare it to our Bills teams, we were pre-salary cap.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And pre-free agency.
Yeah. So, given.
That changes everything. You can't compare those two things. We did do the Colts, you know, the post-free agent, the Peyton Manning Colts, only to draw a comparison. And we were going to do the Bill Cowher Steelers, but we just ran out of space. And we'd already done the steel curtain. So the publishers thought, well, leave it where it is. But the post-free agency and pre-free agency are
two different
things.
Yeah.
But
completely different. Having said that, I think this Rams team, as presently constituted, is probably really pretty good among the better teams we've had in recent years because everybody's flawed. So what's their flaw? Well, their flaw is number one, left guard and essentially right tackle in pass protection. And Haverstein, to his credit, is really a tough, gritty guy. So against power rushers that he faced on Sunday, you know, he hung in there pretty good. Speed guys give him problems. The left guard is a liability. But the Bengals didn't take advantage of it, unfortunately. And I think had they had Okungjobi, maybe it's a little more of an even game. Their linebackers are neither one of them are great. But since we've expanded the field to 53 and a third yards, and we're now throwing it 40 and 50 yards down the field, we're down basically to two linebackers anyway.
Right.
You know, we now have two linebackers, and many of them are multifaceted athletes as opposed to the Dick Butkus, Ray Nitschke type of linebacker in years past. So they're not as important as they used to be, as the running game has decreased in importance. So have the job of linebackers. So even though you're not great at linebacker, you don't have an all pro there. You don't have a Luke Kuechly there. It's not that dispositive. If you have Kuechly, it's a real plus. But if you have less than him, it's not this positive unless they're just slugs and nobody really, you know, neither of those teams have slugs. In fact, the Bengals linebackers are outstanding. And then in the secondary, the Rams corner opposite Ramsey and one safety are not great players. But that's three weaknesses, three pretty glaring weaknesses, which is about par for the course for everybody. That's what free agency does. Yeah. There are no more complete teams. So if you flip it the other way and you look at it the way Les Snead looked at it, his draft choices are all low. And no matter where they finish this year, they were going to probably make the playoffs, so it was going to be below 20 anyway. Statistically, again, using analytics over time tells you that in any given draft, there are no more than 20 first rounders. So if you're drafting below 20, the chances are you're drafting a second round player. And so that pick is really devalued. I really call it a high second rather than a first. And then ultimately he's getting players who are the best at their position. Matthew Stafford is, you know, while not among the top six in the league, is within the top 10 when he was in Detroit. And the only reason he was not in the top six was because Detroit was so lousy in every other area once they got rid of Jim Caldwell. He was in the top six or seven when Jim Caldwell was coaching there, with without receivers. So now he comes to the Rams, and he's got Cup, and he's got the USC kid that's hurt.
He's got Woods. He's got Beckham.
It's Woods back.
And then Woods is replaced by Beckham at no cost.
Right.
And so. That was a heck of a deal. And then you have and drafted a generational all-time talent. I mean, I don't think there's Aaron Donald. There's no one in the league today, and there's no one in my memory going back to Joe Green that has as big an effect on the game in both phases, running pass, as Aaron Donald. So you drafted him, and now you add to that Floyd, who you drafted. So now you got two bona fide rushers. And so now you give up what amounts to small change for Von Miller, who completes the picture. Now you got three people that basically can't be blocked one-on-one. You could get a big power guy who, if he got his hands on Floyd, might be able to stymie him, but if Floyd's on the move, it's hard to block him, and the other two can't be blocked one-on-one, period.
Right.
So you've created a mismatch at the most important part. If you want to affect the passing game, which is right where the ball is snapped, right? That's why the three technique is so important, because the quarterback handles the ball on every play, and he's the defender closest to the quarterback.
Yeah.
And so that's number one. And then number two, you know that every offense has a go-to guy. There are very few teams, Kansas City being one of them, Buffalo being another, that have two receivers that really are equal and who can make plays. And Buffalo's guy has only emerged over the last year or so. You know, we know what the number one guy is. So you got Ramsey, who can take away most every receiver, most every number one in the league. And so you got at the positions of influence, biggest influence, you got players mm-hmm. who are incredibly good and at the best at their position. And you got them with picks that are, you know, where you couldn't pick them. Now, they picked Kupp in the third round, and that, God bless them. I mean, that's a great pickup. Yeah. He's Andre Reed. You know, that you're going to get, if you do a good scouting job, you're going to get those guys occasionally, but not always. So bottom line is, I think that's good strategy. Now, how do you deal with the time in 24, 20, and 20, 23, 24, and 25 when you don't have ones and Kupp is aging and Aaron is about to wrap it up and Miller's about to wrap it up? Then the team has probably a precipitous fall when all those guys are finished. But that's going to be true anyway. So, you know, teams, championship teams,
right,
out of the mouth of Phil Jackson and Bill Bradley, have 7-year lifespans.
Yeah.
8 if you're very lucky.
And in the free agency era, always in salary cap.
And tougher. Always being eroded in the process because
exactly.
of free agency.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't do it. And I thought it was great. Great use of picks. The whole idea of draft picks, so-called draft capital, is to add good players to your team or great players to your team. And they did it. Doesn't matter how old the guys are.
Right.
As long as they can still play and be great players, that's what that capital is for. And the idea that you use a mid to low level draft choice and get a 10-year player is nonsense. We right. did it with Anthony Costanzo in Indianapolis. You know how often that happens?
Not often.
Yeah.
Not often. You know, everybody says, oh, we want this guy to play 10 years. You know what the average lifespan of a really good player is? 8.
Yeah.
Go look up the Hall of Famers and see how many.
Yep.
Especially in the modern era, played more than 8 years, or more than 6 to 7 years of peak performance. That's the most important analytic.
Mm-hmm.
How many years do you have peak performance?
Yeah.
The old Branch Rickey. It's rather better to get rid of a player a year too early than a year too late. Bill Belichick's done that forever.
Or two years too early.
Yeah. So. The bottom line is this idea of the 10-year career that's going to be at the top the whole time. That doesn't exist. That's another myth.
Right.
So short answer, Les did a great job. And right. and they'll deal with 23 and 24 when the time comes. And guess what? They'll have cap room and they'll be and you can fill some holes with free agency. Not everyone, but you can fill some with free agency.
So conclude your answer, you know, what Scott asked. How do you rank them? I mean,
I think they're a really good team. I thought Tampa Bay was a really good team. And, you know, the fact that they advanced beyond Tampa Bay in the playoffs is based on one call where obviously somebody didn't or a group of people didn't get the word. You can argue with the call. I do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they were every bit as good as Tampa Bay.
Your Colts teams would have that 06 Colts team would have given them a world of problems with Reggie.
Yeah, we
would.
Yeah,
Clark.
Yeah, sure. And here's the other thing: if Beckham doesn't get hurt,
different deal.
That game is not close.
Uh-uh.
Because they didn't. The Bengals didn't have anybody who could cover Beckham.
But to me, if you've got a really great tight end and you've got a really good second receiver, you can give them real trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. You can. Sure. But they're a good team. They're a good team. Very deserving.
Yeah.
There we go. Well, maybe there'll be a team for Super Bowl Blueprints 2. You never know. Could be in the sequel.
That's right.
Well, we're in a different, you know, we're in a different era, yeah, too. We're in a different era.
And then after that, the movie version of Super Bowl Blueprints, you were waiting for that?
It actually would make a really good documentary, but that's a conversation for another day.
All right.
All right. Well, we blew through our agenda for the second half of the show, so we'll dive into some of the offseason coaching hires in next week's show. A lot of stuff we needed to cover in the Super Bowl. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you. This was a fun one. Be well, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the Super Bowl despite the flaws.
See you guys.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.